Hi, everybody. I've got a very, very important message today, and it's something which is potentially going to have a huge, huge impact. And I'm talking, of course, about the recently published draft code of good practice on dismissal. Now, in many respects, I feel utterly vindicated because for 20 years or more, I have been saying the way that dismissals are managed from a procedural point of view, emulating court practice is crazy. That's not what it's about. And yet it's become more and more and more complex. And employers just don't have the skill, they don't have the time, they don't have the knowledge. And it's one of the major causes of imperfections in our labor market. As you might know, I meet with the IMF delegation twice a year. Here we talk about labor market flexibility, and this is one of the topics that always comes up. And at last, government has sat up and taken notice. Now, let me put this into context. There are a raft of changes coming in the LRA. This is not the only one. This is one of the most important ones. Of course, we'll deal with all of them. But this one is an admission that they got it wrong. Now, governments and most people, myself included, don't usually stand up and say, we really messed this one up and we're to blame and it's a terrible thing. But the fact that they've put this out now is an indication. So whilst there's no clear we did it wrong, if you read into it, it's obvious what they're trying to do away with, and that is excess proceduralism, unnecessary cost, unnecessary difficulty, also realizing that smaller businesses are the engines of growth and they need to encourage them. And the last point I want to make in terms of this introduction is don't be put off where it says draft code. I can assure you this is what's going to happen. It's already been agreed at NEDLAC. This thing has been in the pipeline for a number of years and it's not going to change. So the sooner you get inside it and understand what it says, and most importantly, how to decrypt it. You know, in reading any code, you've got to be able to decode it so you understand what it means. And that takes a little bit of doing. And then, of course, you've got to understand what are the opportunities it offers me and how can I implement them. So it really, really is perhaps the most important change we've seen in our legislation in a decade. So I'm with Sarah Levy, who runs Levy Africa, our training division. But increasingly, we work more and more closely in the broader area of consultancy. And Sarah, I want to ask you, what are your impressions having read the code?
Well, I fully agree with you. This is a very significant change to the practice of labor relations. And I think it really seems, if my overall impression is, that to a large extent, common sense seems to prevail. So we see some very interesting shifts. I do think that the devil is going to be in the detail, as they say.
Yeah. Right.
So I think for me, the kind of first most overwhelming impression that I had was that this is very much a guidance note. The tone is explanatory. They're setting out how we should interpret things, how we should apply things. There's definitely a shift in language. They even tell us that there's a shift in language. They say, we're not going to use the expression dismissal for operational reasons.
Yeah.
We're going to use the expression retrenchment. So it seems to me that this is an opportunity to kind of regroup, to look at what's been going on, and to provide us with guidance on where we want to go.
And by the way, just on that point, what they've done is they've taken the code of dismissal on operational requirement, aka retrenchment, and put it into this document in a very, very simplified way.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because I walked away with my kind of primary question being, they haven't addressed the interplay of the two. So is this going to replace the code of good practice on dismissal completely, or is this like a supplementary memo to that code? And what happens to the code on operational requirements?
Mm. You know, my sense is that this replaces it. Otherwise, there's no point. Mm. Why issue a new code? But the other thing that is important is that existing case law interpretations, lines which have been followed repeatedly, particularly by the Con Court, must always be borne in mind.
Absolutely. And in some part, we see that this is a codification in the true sense of the word.
It is.
So they've looked at case law and they've actually said, right, we're now going to make this law. We're now going to codify it. You're going to find it in a single reference point.
Absolutely. And I mean, for example, there's, I wouldn't say an endless number, but there are many cases which say this endless proceduralism, this attempt to emulate high court procedure is not necessary, but yet people go on and on and on. Mm. And, you know, it may be interesting to reflect on why this happened. So, you know, let's just leave that in the air for the moment. But the important point is that this is the opportunity to make the changes.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the kind of practical areas where I saw that, this codification, is in the area of incompatibility. So we've had lovely case law develop over the years, and you and I have laughed about, I think there was the famous case involving the Barry White,
<That's>
the
right.
Barry White song. There was the case about the guy who,
with the pens and the cap, that's right.
Absolutely.
The eccentric.
Exactly. And we actually see it's now written into the law or into this code. So there's no doubt about what you follow. The code is setting out how we deal with incompatibility.
And just to make things plain, when we talk about incompatibility, we're talking about chemistry. It's not how you perform, it's not how you behave, but how you fit in. And that leads to another vital, vital, vital thing, which is the single biggest tool, in my opinion, which this code offers the employer, and that's it clarifies probation.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really kind of, it sets it out so clearly. At the very beginning, I'd say what it says very clearly to me is that you can still only use probation for genuine reasons. So they still rule out the kind of abuse of probation, where we have probationers come in, they cancel at the end.
As they should.
Absolutely. Yeah. But there are some very important changes to the language around probation and how we implement it.
Including the message to the commissioners, which is contained in the LRA, that a lesser standard of fairness applies for the probationer. And I think the idea behind it is you have the probation period to see if there's a fit. And during that time, it's easy to dismiss. Once you've taken on and they have tenure, then it becomes very difficult. And I have no problem with that.
So interestingly, and I know that you'll tease me for being too legalistic in my approach from time to time, but I sat with the old code and the new code to look at exactly what the wording changes are. I know you probably know those off by heart already. I perhaps don't have as good a memory. But some of the things that are missing, and it's very obvious by omission, going to your point about being less procedural, there's no requirement of an investigation if you're dismissing a probationer. There's actually no reference to an employee representative or trade union official, trade union or shop steward, and there's no reference to referring a dispute to the CCMA or the bargaining council. So I think that we see a very clear change in the way that we're going to manage probationers.
You know, one of the things that was mooted that for the first 6 months there would be no right to approach the CCMA. I think that may have been a step too far. But, you know, as you say, if you look at the words, the old and the new, and I would never accuse you of being legalistic, you have a fine mind. I know where it came from. You're absolutely right.
Another thing that I think is really interesting when we're dealing with this issue of moving away from the proceduralism is the investigations.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just this kind of investigations are very seriously curtailed. It's almost like they're saying to us, we're putting an end to the circus.
Exactly. And, you know, if you look again at decrypting the code, all it's saying is the Audi rule is simple. It doesn't mean you're a court. It simply means that the person has an opportunity to say, wait a minute, it wasn't me, it was my twin brother. You know, that's always how I get into trouble. But, you know, just to kind of wrap this up is to say we will be running a seminar, a webinar, which will take you through all of this and enable you to look at where you are in your company and how you can change. I mean, there are pinch points. So, for example, if you've got your procedure in a collective agreement, you're going to have to negotiate the changes. But once again, that's something we can deal with. So come along to the webinar. We're looking at the 6th of March, but we'll notify you with endless emails and letters and spam and things like that. And we look forward to seeing you.
And the other point to make is if you're looking for a copy of the draft code and you can't find it because there was some confusion around its publication, please feel free to be in touch with us. Contact administration@levyafrica.com and we'll gladly send you a copy.
Thank you. See you all again soon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.